The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
X on ESPN Radio, Channel 80, Sirius XM, the listen tab of the ESPN app for the next couple of hours. And I'm so happy to be here. I can't even tell you how excited I am to be doing a radio show on this particular Thursday. We'll get to your calls, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and the first guest coming up is going to be our ESPN NFL insider, Dan Graziano, as we will talk to Dan about everything, all the quarterback carousel, the rumors heading towards the draft, and everything going on, even with some of the household names in the National Football League, like the drama surrounding Aaron Rodgers. So we'll get to all that coming up in a few. But I had the vaccine a couple of days ago. I cannot tell you, like, spring has sprung. Nothing makes me more happy than turning on the television and seeing the Masters opening round on ESPN, which is about to start in about an hour, but I've been watching the feature group channels and all the live coverage on ESPN.com and on ESPN Plus all day so far. And, you know, it brought to mind, Dan Orlovsky threw this out there on Twitter earlier, and I was having the exact same thought, that there are certain weekend days in sports that have a feel, right? Like Sunday's about NFL, Saturday's about college football, and you think about the Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday, and, you know, the when we have all those championship games in college football and you line them all up, some of the really special days that we have as sports fans. But there are a handful of weekdays during the year that have a certain kind of ceremonial feel to them. Opening night in the National Football League, which falls on a Thursday. Day one of the NCAA tournament, which in a normal year would also always fall on a Thursday. To me, nothing beats Thursday, the Masters, round one. Because it just reeks of spring, right? Like, if you're someone right now listening to me in California or Florida or Arizona, I'm already predisposed to not like you because you live in sunshine. Right? You don't understand what it's like to live where we live. I pay $20,000 a year in property taxes to freeze my butt off and have ice and snow all over my driveway and to be angry all winter and it's dark and you're miserable. And, you know, it's that feeling you get when you turn on the Rose Bowl. Like, whenever I was growing up watching the bowl games, you know, it's great to watch the Sugar Bowl and the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl and all the fruit and flower bowls that were such a big part of our upbringing. But when the Rose Bowl would come on and it's dark outside and cold and it's the dead of winter and you're miserable, and all of a sudden, here comes across your television this panorama of colors, blue sky, the mountains, Pasadena, that field is like this emerald green, and you just feel better. And when you come out of a long, dark winter, and we are right now coming out of the longest and darkest of winters, not only in the Northeast, but everywhere around the world, when you turn on round one of the Masters, and you are looking at the most emerald green fairways, the azaleas and the dogwoods are blooming, it just makes me happy. So I've got the vaccine on board. I'm watching round one of the Masters. I get to talk sports with you at 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN. Again, we'll get to Dan coming up in just a couple of minutes. But if you're interested in the Masters and the latest check of the leaderboard early on today, this was a tournament that was playing more like the first round of the U.S. Open than it was the first round of the Masters, because this is a brutally hard golf course. But Hideki Matsuyama is playing the Masters right now and playing Augusta National the way you have to play it. He is making nothing but pars until he gets to the par fives. He birdied number two. He eagled number eight. He birdied 13. He birdied 15. Or he's playing 15 right now. He's four under par, and all of his work has been done on the par fives. I saw Andy North talking to Michael Eaves earlier today on SportsCenter when they were covering early coverage of this round one, and they talked about the fact that the only four holes on the golf course so far that are playing under par are the four par fives. That's a U.S. Open, right? I mean, that is, you got to survive the par threes and the par fours, and when you get to the par fives, you better do your damage or you're going to be losing ground to the field. So right now, Matsuyama and Webb Simpson, who has just birdied 13. They are both at four under par, a great start for Mark Leishman. He's only six holes into his opening round. He is also at minus four. The pace set right now by Brian Harman. He is done. Shoots an opening round 67 and birdied 18 to do it. So he's at minus three. Will Zalatoris is at minus two. He is in the clubhouse. A couple of other players at minus three. Paul Casey off to a good start. Christian Bezuidenhout is also at minus three. Patrick Reed has gotten to minus two. So these are some of the names that are at the top of the leaderboard. For some of the notable names, it's been a bit of a struggle for Dustin Johnson. He's even par and only has a couple of birdies on the card. Looks like he bogeyed 11 and then was able to par 13, 14, 12, 13, and 14. So he's playing the par 5, 13th right now, and he is trying to get into red numbers, but he didn't have a birdie on the card yet, now that I'm looking at it with Dustin Johnson. Yeah, he has not birdied a hole. John Rahm is also at even par. Rory McIlroy is at plus three and had to make about a 30-footer for par at number 11 to stay at plus three. So we'll keep you updated on the first round of the Masters. And also, later on this afternoon, and it seems like I think they probably should be on the first hole right now, Justin Thomas, who is one of the favorites in this event, is just getting his Masters underway. He will be probably one of the most seen players on ESPN's coverage, which begins at 3 o'clock and will take you through the end of the first round. And when the media asked Justin Thomas about the Masters this year in particular and Tiger not being there, he did admit that it's just got a different feel, I guess, when Tiger is not at Augusta playing in the Masters. Here's what Justin Thomas had to say.
I went over and saw him a couple times last week, and I've tried to just go over a couple times during the week whenever I'm home and see him. And yeah, he texted Freddie and I this morning saying, I think it's kind of starting to set in. He's bummed he's not here playing practice rounds with us, and we hate it too.
Yeah, so Tiger Woods not being at the Masters certainly gives it a different feel. But if you're a golf nut like me, I mean, it could be five choppers out there shooting 90 on Sunday, and I'd probably be happy to watch it. Just to see Augusta National on TV makes me feel better at this time of the year. So if you want to get into the golf, you certainly can at 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Again, Bob Wischusen sitting in for Max Kellerman on the Max Kellerman Show here on ESPN Radio. The NBA is something we'll get into a little bit later on as well. One thing I want to ask Laker fans, and we'll get into this after we talk to Dan Graziano later on this hour, but a question I've got for Laker fans. On the panic meter, where are you? How concerned are you? Because to me, like, as someone that is on the East Coast, so we have from a distance, we're not watching every possession of every game, every quarter of the Lakers. If you're kind of removed from the Lakers, and you are not living and dying with every game, you have this blind faith that at some point AD and LeBron are going to come back and all will be right with the world. And do Laker fans feel that way? Regardless of how many games you lose while those two guys are out? Is there this feeling? Because I would think if I were a Laker fan, based on those two guys, what we have already seen them be capable of doing, winning and winning a championship, that when they both come back, the attitude is going to be, all right, now we're good. Who cares what happened while those guys were out? Doesn't matter. Who cares who we play in the first round? Who cares how many different teams we have to go through and how many road games we have to play? Once we've got Anthony Davis and LeBron back, we are good. Then we are a championship team again, regardless of the opponent. Or are you worried that you're doing enough damage to yourself losing games while those guys aren't there that if you drop far enough down in the standings, and all of a sudden now instead of having a soft landing spot, at least in the first round, I don't know if there's ever going to be a soft landing spot in the Western Conference once you get past the first round. And even in the first round, it's hard to find a soft landing spot in the NBA Western Conference. But your softest landing spot ought to be in the first round if you still have to go through, say, the Suns and Utah to get to a final. Is that going to be too much? Are Laker fans worried? Again, there's this blind faith if you're someone that's removed. If you're not living and dying with every possession, that once AD and LeBron come back, there's nothing to worry about. Those guys are just that good, and they will elevate the group around them, and they'll beat whoever's in front of them, and it won't really matter to them who you put in front of them. Is that not giving an unbelievable turnaround story in Phoenix enough respect? Is that not giving the Jazz, who seem to be right now about as complete a team in every facet of the game as there is in the NBA in terms of defense, three-point shooting, having guys that can kill you on the glass, guarding the lane with Rudy Gobert, having a superstar young guard that, you know, no one really saw coming a handful of years ago and now has turned into one of the NBA's premier players. They check every box. Is there a belief among Laker fans that once we get to the playoffs, I don't care. Put anybody you want in front of us, including the Jazz. They could be a 65-win team during the regular season. We don't care. We get our two guys back, we win. It'll be very interesting. It does set up some drama for the playoffs. The Western Conference, as always it seems to be, is going to be great to watch. So we can talk about that here on the East Coast. Kevin Durant getting back in the lineup for the Nets last night was a big deal. How big a deal? You know, it's amazing. I put this out on Twitter. Some people were, took offense to it if you're a Nets fan, like somehow it was a knock. The Nets, to me, are like the arena football team of the NBA. They look at a game like it's arena football. I used to cover arena football in my early days at ESPN and way back when in like the early 2000s. And you talk to defensive coordinators in arena football. Their attitude was, if we get four stops a game, we'll probably win by two touchdowns. Because all anybody does in arena football is score a touchdown. So the way they looked at it is if the other team's got the ball 20 times in the game, if we stop them three times, we probably win. And it seems like that's the way that that the Nets look at it. Great, go ahead, score 115 points. Shoot 53% from the field, we don't care. We're going to shoot 60%, score 130 and beat you. And getting Kevin Durant back, and he goes five for his first five, and, you know, they have played a handful of games this year with Kyrie, Harden, and Durant. Doesn't matter which of those guys is out, they just keep on winning. So, we'll get into that coming up a little bit later on as well. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But let's talk some football. Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL insider and analyst, joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline and spends some time with Bob Wischusen and filling in for Max Kellerman here on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. Dan, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, Bob. How you been?
I've been good. It's a crazy time, obviously, as the Jet play-by-play guy here in New York. I was a little bittersweet that Sam Darnold got shipped away. Your thoughts on the compensation the Jets got back and whether or not there was maybe a few teams out there, or was Carolina the only team out there that really has a belief that Sam Darnold can still be really good as an NFL quarterback?
Well, it was the only team out there at that compensation level. So I guess relative to other teams, we had heard a lot about Darnold as a potential backup option in some places. Teams weren't really willing to give more than a third or fourth round pick. So once it got to a second rounder from Carolina, I think that's what did the deal for the Jets. So, I think that Carolina obviously went into this offseason with high hopes at the quarterback position. They tried to get Matthew Stafford before the Rams did. And they, of course, were positioned on Deshaun Watson. And we all know what's going on there has obviously put the brakes on any potential trade for him, for anyone. So this was the option they decided was best at the price. And they didn't give up their first round pick. They're still positioned if somebody better does become available. But over the next 2 years, they'll pay Sam Darnold about $23 million. And that's a pretty reasonable price if the guy can play. And, he's still young. He's younger than Joe Burrow. Like, it's not, it's not out of the question that they get something out of him. He was the three pick just 3 years ago.
I'm 100% on board with that. I think that there's a chance that a handful of years from now, Carolina, and I was going to talk about this coming up in the next segment, but I'm going to throw it at you now. Carolina is going to make Washington and Chicago and, I don't know, maybe Denver. I mean, a handful of other teams that right now do not have anything really solid and for sure at future, at quarterback. They may make all of those teams look really stupid.
Yeah, you could throw New England, but the Jets weren't going to trade him.
No, he'll never go to New England.
That's not really fair.
Yep.
But, it's – I think he's a year older than Mac Jones, who might be the three pick this year. Like, this, you could – and he started a handful of NFL games. He knows a little bit about it. So, yeah, you get him in the right situation and keep him healthy. I don't think it's a bad bet by Carolina at all.
Do you think there's any real possibility, real truth to the idea that Carolina, if the right quarterback, maybe Justin Fields, is still on the board at eight, that they would draft another quarterback as much as I keep hearing that possibility kicked around?
I think if the quarterback of their dreams were available at eight, they would draft him. But I think the way to look at this is that Carolina, in doing its gathering of pre-draft intelligence, came to the conclusion that whoever that guy is won't be there. And that's why they decided to move ahead with the Darnold trade. 100%. So whatever that is, maybe Mac Jones was their guy, and they're 100% convinced the Niners are taking him. So we can't get him now, so what's plan B? So if something were to happen in this hypothetical scenario, if the Niners surprised and went with a different guy, and now Mac Jones is dropping to 8, then yes, I could see it happening. But again, this is hypothetical. I'm just putting names in there for examples.
Right. ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano joining us here. Bob Wischusen filling in for Max Kellerman on the Max Kellerman Show here on ESPN Radio. All right. We've always thought that this draft started at number 2 because when the Jets still had Sam Darnold, there was a lot of uncertainty as to what was going to happen. Well, now we know the Jets are going to take Zach Wilson. This draft now, in your mind, starts at 3. Or are you pretty solid that you think you know what San Francisco is going to do? Does this draft start at 4 with Atlanta? Like, to me, where do you think the drama starts on draft night?
Well, San Francisco could start it, right? I mean, like, there seems to be a strong consensus forming that Mac Jones is their guy. I don't personally think, from what I've been told, that they've decided yet, and it still could be Trey Lance or even Justin Fields, but... you know, as we get closer, that might congeal a little bit to the point where we're as certain on Mac Jones to the Niners as we are on Zach Wilson to the Jets and Trevor Lawrence to the Jaguars, which we've been certain of ever since the season ended. So, yes, that would mean the draft would start at 4. So does Atlanta? What does Atlanta do? They're at 4. Their quarterback's going to be 36 years old. Do they take one? They could, especially if they believe that one of the two remaining guys is the answer long term. But once the Niners make their pick, or once we all know who the Niners are going to pick, that's when that 4 pick becomes really interesting. Because if you're a quarterback needy team, now there's only 2 guys. And if one of those 2 guys is the guy you want, you're calling Atlanta. And now Atlanta just saw a pick in front of them get traded for 3 first rounders and a 3rd rounder. So they're picking up the phone, because if that's the price or anything close to it, then it's going to be worth their while to listen.
Do you think anyone jumps, not just with Atlanta, even maybe, you know, up with, say, I don't know, the Dolphins? Could they make another trade at 6 if they're set with Tua? Like, what do you think? There's any other jockeying that could be done with teams a little further down in the draft, like New England, to go up and get one of these quarterbacks? What do you think the most likely scenario would be?
Yeah, there's always that kind of jockeying. And I mean, Miami, maybe, but remember, they went down to 12 with the Niner deal, and then went back up to 6.
Right.
So that tells me they have somebody in mind that they want to take there, or that they have a group of guys. New England from 15, Denver from 9, and then if you go further down the draft, you get into the 20s with teams like Chicago and Washington and Pittsburgh, but I think that's going to be too big a jump for those teams. So probably you're looking at New England and Denver as the two most likely teams to move up to that top 5, top 6, top 7. Detroit at 7, they could take a quarterback, I guess, but with Jared Goff in play, they may not be thinking that way, and so that pick might be available too. Cincinnati's pick at 5 could be available, you know, if they feel good about not dropping back too far. So, yeah, there will be that kind of jockeying. But New England and Denver would be the two teams. A week ago, I would have said New England, Denver, and Carolina, but it looks like Carolina made a move.
A couple of more minutes with Dan Graziano here with Talkin' NFL, or ESPN NFL Insider. Bob Wischusen sitting in for Max Kellerman on the Max Kellerman Show here on ESPN Radio. All right, outside of the draft, the other big story that keeps on kind of not going away, lurking beneath the surface, but at the same time, I can't see a pathway, at least this year, even next year, for Aaron Rodgers to leave Green Bay. How likely do you think it is that a true legendary quarterback, say not this season but next season, is no longer the quarterback for the Packers? Or do you think there is a chance that, you know, like kind of the nuclear bomb of quarterback stories would drop and something happens with Aaron Rodgers before this coming season starts?
I don't think it happens before this season starts, because the economically it would be very difficult for them, a team that already has cap problems, to take on, you know, $38+ million in dead money and all that. So I don't think it happens this year. But they have restructured a lot of contracts to save cap space this offseason, and Aaron Rodgers is not one of them. And what that means is the dead money, if they move on next year, is exactly the same, unchanged. If they restructure, it will go up. So it's just as easy for them to move on from him next year as it was, you know, months ago. So they've left open that possibility. And I think, you know, the way to look at this is year to year. They draft Jordan Love in the first round last year, trade up to draft Jordan Love in the first round last year. He didn't really get much developmental time, right? There's no preseason games for him to play in. Rodgers took all the first team snaps in practice all year. So you've got to see what Jordan Love shows you this year, what Aaron Rodgers shows you this year. He wins MVP again and he wins the Super Bowl. Maybe your plans change and you sign him long term. But I think the possibility exists that this would be his last year in Green Bay. It just depends on a number of factors. They've left themselves the flexibility to do it if they want to.
So if that is on a scale of 1 to 10, say like a 7 or something, you know, not unlikely, but, I mean, at least trending towards it being possible, where would you put Russell Wilson on that same scale with Seattle?
For this year or next year?
Either. You tell me. I mean, like if it happened, when do you think it would happen?
I think probably next year if it happened. Look, I mean, first of all, everything I'm hearing on that scenario is very positive right now in terms of the relationship between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Sounds like the communication's been good and all that. But, you know, his agent did put out a list of teams he'd consider, so it tells you his head is at least partially somewhere else. So the key there would be if Seattle really felt like it had a strong option at quarterback if it were to move on from him. Like, let's say they were picking second, right, and then they had Zach Wilson coming in, then maybe it's more likely. But right now they don't. And I think until such time as that happens, they're not inclined to move Russell Wilson. And it doesn't seem like he's going to make enough of an issue of it to force their hand, certainly not this offseason, if ever.
That makes sense. Dan, thanks a million for doing this with me. I appreciate it.
Happy to, Bob. Take care.
All right, man. Appreciate it. That's Dan Graziano joining us on the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear. More driven. All right, he laid a lot out. I've got some thoughts even going back to our conversation at the start. I kind of alluded to it, but when we come back, if you're listening to me in Washington, in Chicago, maybe in Minneapolis, I don't know, maybe in Denver, I'm going to fire some GMs when we get back. I'm going to call some people out because there was a big trade that was made this past week in the NFL. It could have been made by multiple teams. One team, I think, slipped the rug out from under everybody else and is going to make them feel stupid down the road. And I'm going to talk a lot more about that with you on the telephones as well at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Bob Wischusen in for Max Kellerman. Hey, did you hear my computer career ads and think I don't know anything about computers? Well, you know what? You don't have to. Before starting, many graduates could turn a computer on and off. That's it. Well, now they're IT pros, and you can do it too. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation. You could start your new life in as little as 4 months. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. Again, I'm calling out some teams. When we come back, Bob Wischusen in for Max Kellerman on the Max Kellerman Show here on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Nice job, Bubba. Right now, Raj, our producer, is trying to figure out if this is like the Everly Brothers. Or right, Bubba? Like, he's confused by who this artist is.
I know exactly who it is.
I don't know if you do.
I am not. It's the Monkees. I watched the show growing up. I know their music, and this is it. You can't fool me.
Yes.
It was a great show.
You nailed it. Way to go. Talk about Name That Tune with Raj. That's a nice job. Bob Wischusen in for Max Kellerman. It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, Channel 80 on Sirius XM as well. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is the telephone number. I'm going to fire some GMs, and if you want to join me and fire them with me, feel free, because it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. The Jets traded Sam Darnold this past week for, in my opinion, what could go down in draft compensation lore as one of the great bargains in history if he goes to Carolina and does what I still believe he can do, and that is be a really good NFL quarterback. And if I were a fan of the Washington football team, if I were a fan of the Chicago Bears, I would want my general manager fired for not being the one that was in the mix to get my hands on Sam Darnold. Because in my opinion, those two teams in particular, and you could pick out three or four other teams that I think stone cold blew it when it comes to going after Sam Darnold. Now look, I'm the Jets radio play-by-play guy. So I watched every single snap of Sam Darnold football over the last 3 years. I am well aware of his Pro Football Focus rankings, what the stats say, what his QBR is. I get all that. There is no statistical argument that I can make that's going to tell you you are getting this with Sam Darnold. You're getting a franchise quarterback. You're getting the third pick in the draft. You're getting a guy that could be in the top five. I get it. There's no statistical argument that I can back that up with other than this. And this is as plain as the stats get. The best skill position player that Sam Darnold played with, the best skill position player production-wise that he played with, was Robbie Anderson. In 3 years here in New York, Robbie Anderson caught 11 touchdowns from Sam Darnold. He was his only regular big play threat. He is now reunited with Robbie Anderson in Carolina. Okay, so statistically, there's nobody that was more productive for Sam Darnold than Robbie Anderson was. Robbie Anderson was an undrafted free agent who was a walk-on at Temple. Now, Sam Darnold goes to Carolina. Robbie Anderson will probably end up being, at best, the third, maybe the fourth best skill position player he's going to have on his new team. In 3 years, the Jets couldn't put anybody else on the field that was better than Robbie Anderson, or even as good, as productive. Now he goes to Carolina. He's got DJ Moore, who's had back-to-back 1,100-yard receiving seasons. The Jets haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2015, when Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall were both 1,000-yard receivers. Now Sam Darnold will throw to a wide receiver that for the last 2 years has at least 1,100 yards receiving. He'll throw for 700 more yards just by dumping the ball to Christian McCaffrey once in a while in the right flat and letting Christian McCaffrey go do his thing. And he's got Robbie Anderson. And, oh, by the way, they still got the 8th pick in the draft. So unless, to me, the unfathomable takes place, and that is Carolina spends this draft compensation on Sam Darnold, and then still go drafts a quarterback, which to me wouldn't make sense. You're kind of announcing to the world that you don't know what it is that your future was or what you wanted to do at quarterback if you trade for Sam Darnold and still draft one. Having said that, though, put that aside for now. Let's say they don't draft a quarterback and they draft Sam Darnold some more help. Well, look at the draft board, how it might fall. You certainly know the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks, right? So San Francisco's not moving up to three to not take a quarterback. You know Trevor Lawrence is going one. You know Zach Wilson's going two. There's going to be a quarterback off the board at three. I think it'll probably be Mac Jones. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's say those three guys are off the board. What do the Falcons do? They might take Justin Fields. They might take Trey Lance. They might take the heir apparent to Matt Ryan. Denver, I don't know, maybe they're going to trade up ahead of Carolina to go after one of those quarterbacks too. That's also possible. I mean, I think there's a very strong possibility that by the time Carolina picks at eight, at least four, if not five quarterbacks have come off the board. What would that mean for Carolina? That would mean, just do the math, that either DeVonta Smith, Kyle Pitts, Jalen Waddle, I mean, all of those guys can't go in the top eight if the other players, if all the quarterbacks go in the top eight as well. So by the time you get to eight, you could have Sam Darnold, after spending 3 years in New York, having no one to play with, no offensive line, and no one to play with, after 3 years of that, having not only Robbie Anderson, but DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Dan Arnold at tight end, and maybe a Kyle Pitts, or a DeVonta Smith, or a Jamar Chase, or Jalen Waddle. He's going to be up there looking around going, where were these guys when I was in New York? And the idea that you're Washington or you're Chicago and you brought Ryan Fitzpatrick in to be your quarterback or Andy Dalton and somehow that means you've checked the box and you don't need to be in the Sam Darnold sweepstakes, you are out of your minds. You're out of your mind. There is no chance you can reasonably sit there and say 3 years from now, either Andy Dalton or Ryan Fitzpatrick is still going to be the starting quarterback with either of those two teams. There is a very reasonable chance that 3 years from now, Sam Darnold is not only going to be the starting quarterback in Carolina, but I think be a good one. So, not only Washington and Chicago, I might throw Minnesota in the mix. I mean, has Kirk Cousins not shown you he is the embodiment of an 8-8, 9-7 quarterback at this point? Pittsburgh needs a future behind Ben Roethlisberger. Denver needs a solution because Drew Lock ain't it. These are teams, in my opinion, that whiffed. I mean stone cold whiffed when it comes to Sam Darnold. Because giving up a sixth round pick this year and a second round pick at a four next year for a guy that I still think can be a legit starter in the NFL, Carolina may end up looking like they did this whole thing with a gun and a mask 4 or 5 years from now. And that doesn't mean that Zach Wilson is not ultimately going to be the right thing for the Jets. Both things can be true. The Jets could give away Sam Darnold for less than maybe he ultimately should have been worth and still end up coming out of it smelling like a rose if Zach Wilson turns out to be what they hope he will be, which is, you know, a combination of Kyler Murray and, you know, I mean, like he could end up being really good as well. So both things can be true. The Jets can be right on both ends. But the teams that I think are wrong, 100% wrong, Washington and Chicago are at the top of that list. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. If you're on hold, stay right there. We're going to get to some phone calls. I want to hear what you guys have to say about the draft and also about what I just pontificated about with Sam Darnold when we come back. But that was the Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. When we come back, we will hit the phones. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Bob Wischusen with you on the phones on the Max Kellerman Show when we come back on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Bob Wischusen back in from Max, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Just had to wait for a second, like any good DJ would, to let a few notes of this song play, because it is good stuff. The Monkees again, I'm sure, is what Raj thinks it is. Bob Wischusen again in from Max, the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, and also Channel 80 Sirius XM, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I had my rant, time for you to weigh in. Chewy in California is first up here with Bob filling in for Max on ESPN Radio. What's up, Chewy?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Great.
I don't know. I think he's still a little bit overrated on Sam Darnold. I saw him play at SD, and when he started out, he was gangbusters. But then in the second year, he was prone to turnovers. I think he's shown that in the NFL. You nailed it. I think he's going to be comparable to a Kirk Cousins / Jameis Winston type of productivity quarterback. But for what Carolina paid for it, you can't beat that deal. You know, that's like a two-for-one burger. You know what I mean? Some things you just can't pass up. And for a six-rounder, yeah,
see,
give him a shot. You
he's
know.
Better than those guys, in my opinion. And I think the reason, again, this is why I've got an advantage that you guys don't have, because I watched every single snap that he's played in the NFL. I'm not sure how many people in L.A. have watched every snap of Sam Darnold in the NFL, but it's my job. I call the games on the radio, so I've seen every snap. Yes, he has been turnover prone, and yes, there are times where he has made head-scratching decisions. But I'll tell you why I think that is. He was trying to play hero ball so many times. He was trying to score like a 21-point touchdown, hit a 7-run home run, because he was out there alone. He was out there by himself, and he is super competitive, and he knew the only chance that he had to actually win some of these games sometimes was to try and force the 10% ball in to try and make a play. That's how he got hurt last year. He got hurt, pile drive down by a Denver Broncos linebacker because he held the ball for so long and didn't just throw it away to fight another day, because he knows if he throws it away, they might not have another day to fight because they had no help. He's out there by himself. So that's why I believe, given help, you're going to see a completely different player. He's just going to be a completely different player. And I truly believe that, because if you watch the tape, don't look at the stats. If you look at the statistics, again, there's no statistical argument I can make to back up Sam Darnold turning into a real top 10 franchise quarterback in the NFL. I get that. But what you have to watch is when he makes the big plays he's capable of making, or when he throws a ball that is sailing over the head of Braxton Berrios or Josh Malone, you close your eyes and picture, man, if he was throwing that to C.J. Moore or Robbie Anderson, they probably would have caught it. He can still do this. And I think you would see a lot of examples of exactly that, where you're sitting there saying to yourself, he can do this if he ever had help. Let's go to Mike in Tennessee, who joins us next here on ESPN Radio. Bob Wischusen in for Max Kellerman. What's up, Mike?
What's going on? All right, so, no, Sam Darnold is not Winston or Cousins. Sam Darnold is Tannehill. Sam Darnold is Alex Smith. He's a good quarterback in the wrong system. I do disagree, though, with you. I don't see him. I don't think he should have went to the Bears or Washington because those teams will get a chance to get a good pick later on. Who should have picked him up was indeed Pittsburgh or the Saints because they need a good quarterback now.
If either of those teams had gone after Sam Darnold, I wouldn't have complained either because you're right, they have aging quarterbacks. Obviously, you know, not only not an aging quarterback, but now a retired quarterback for New Orleans. You know, they seem pretty set on Jameis Winston. I think Jameis Winston has the talent where he probably deserves a second chance as well. But I think Sam Darnold is better, a much better option than Washington or Chicago's got. Like, to me, if I'm a general manager and I'm option A, I've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is absolutely a stopgap backup quarterback 1 to 2 year solution, or I can take a guy like Sam Darnold and try and rehabilitate his career and make him my quarterback of the future, or the same thing with Andy Dalton. I'm amazed that those two organizations wouldn't have been much more aggressively involved in trying to outbid Carolina and gotten Sam Darnold rather than going the idea that they got Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton and both organizations were like, we're good. I'm good. I got my quarterback. Why would I need Sam Darnold? I've got Ryan Fitzpatrick or Andy Dalton. I'm now out of the Sam Darnold market. To me, that is malpractice on the part of those two teams. Quickly, let's squeeze in Parker in Nebraska real quick. Quote towards the top of the hour here on ESPN Radio. Hey, Parker.
Hey, I was just had a quick question for you. How do you think, like, as far as all the starters go, Sam Darnold is going to fit in? Like, do you think he's going to be pretty top tier at Carolina, or do you think it's going to take a few years? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see a completely different play. I mean, you know, how do I categorize him? He's going to be top 10 next year, top 15. All I know is you are going to see a much improved player next year when he has weapons around him. He has help because he has not had help. Who was his Christian McCaffrey? Who was his Moore? Who was even his Robbie Anderson last year? Nobody like that was out there helping Sam Darnold. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. 1 hour in the books. Bob Wischusen coming up with another hour on the way. Again, we'll get back to the calls. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Hour number two. Stick around. Coming right back on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.